Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's Q&A with Layla. This is part two of our weekly discussion. So let's get right to our questions with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. Layla, what's our first question this hour?
We have a question from Anthony. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I recently came across your radio show on WOR, and on one occasion you mentioned inflammation and its cause for many disorders. Well, about a year and a half ago, I was diagnosed with Churg-Strauss syndrome after several years of increasing health issues related to inflammation, namely nasal polyps, asthma, Bell's palsy, and then the onset of joint pain before my pulmonologist related these many issues to this one cause. Now he's on an immune suppressor for the Churg-Strauss syndrome, and he tried a gluten-free diet for 4 months with no noticeable improvement. And his question is, do you have any recommendation for this syndrome, vascular inflammation or autoimmune disease, that may be helpful to alleviate my condition and avoid many of the medications required daily?
Well, first of all, let me just say that this would be a very, very detailed and complex case, even in a person-to-person medical consultation. Because Churg-Strauss syndrome, first of all, it's a very rare condition. We learn about it in medical school, but I don't think I've ever seen a single patient in my medical career with Churg-Strauss syndrome. So it's not a common syndrome. Perhaps a few thousand people suffer from it in the United States. Every year, it's not commonly diagnosed. It's hard to diagnose, and so congratulations to your pulmonologist for coming up with a diagnosis. It is generally treated with some of these newer immunosuppressive medications. Maybe he's taking something like 6-MP, or some of these are actually cancer drugs that suppress the immune system, knock it out. The program would be very individualized for this. We would look to see if they're critical nutritional deficiencies that may play a role in this. It's not clear that nutrients alone will fix this because it's a serious disease. I'm going to say right out. It's like some people say, well, geez, don't use that medication because there's got to be a vitamin out there or something from the health food store. Maybe take a little, take some fish oil. Mm. Well, I'm sure fish oil could be beneficial.
It's anti-inflammatory. Anti-inflammatories would be helpful.
Sure. Yeah. They might be helpful to the cause. I would obviously check vitamin D in a patient with an autoimmune condition like this. If he weren't taking a powerful immunosuppressive, we might take something like low-dose naltrexone to reverse the autoimmunity. Yeah. But if you're taking a powerful immunosuppressive, low-dose naltrexone will be neutralized. It won't have any benefits. And we would also possibly use something like Moducare. Moducare is good for, it's a product made by the same Wakanaga, the company that makes Kyolic. Mm-hmm. It is a stearinol, not a steroid, but a stearinol that has sort of anti-inflammatory and anti-autoimmune effects, useful in some autoimmune disorders. Yeah. And we might apply things like curcumin, boswellin. They also have anti-inflammatory effects. But it's a tough kind of condition. And I got to say, when I treat, there are two ways I treat medical conditions. One is like based on experience. There's a protocol for treating a common disease like rheumatoid arthritis or treating ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And there's actually literature on what nutrients make a difference, what things work and what things don't work. So we can actually rely on studies to tell us, this is a plausible thing to do. I virtually guarantee you that there's no study of any specific nutrient in the treatment of Churg-Strauss syndrome. I can virtually guarantee it. We could look it up on Medline and see, but apparently nothing. And so we have to extrapolate. We have to say, it's an autoimmune condition, and other autoimmune conditions respond well to this, this, and this, and we might apply that here.
Yeah.
And we certainly, just because he doesn't respond to a gluten-free diet doesn't mean he wouldn't respond to something like a paleo diet, eliminating other problem foods.
And I would wonder, was he entirely gluten-free for 4 months? What about dairy? Dairy is a usual suspect in autoimmunity. What about nightshades? Especially would want to see what his sensitivities are here, too.
And so, we would also, one of the things we do is we look for a leaky gut syndrome. We try to heal the gut. We know that the intestinal tract plays such an important role in spawning many of these inflammatory diseases.
It is hypothesized that leaky gut is the beginning of most autoimmune conditions. Right. What do you think of that, Dr. Hoffman?
Absolutely. I think it's a very crucial thing because once, this week has been the Human Microbiome Week on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We did a guy who wrote the book, The Missing Microbes, and he is Dr. Blazer at the NYU Human Microbiome Project. This is amazing that at the hospital that I did my medical training at, they now have a human microbiome product. Who'd have thunk it,
wow.
You know, 30 years ago
wow.
when I was there. They actually are investigating the effects of the balance of intestinal flora on susceptibility to certain diseases. And they haven't worked this out. It's going to take a long time. It's a very complex subject, but it's an object of intense research to determine the effects of imbalanced intestinal flora on the incidence of these weird diseases that we're seeing more and more of.
Yeah.
So, imbalanced intestinal flora combined with changes in intestinal permeability, the toxins from the bacteria leak mm-hmm. into the systemic circulation. Also, food becomes much more able to traverse the intestinal barrier and get into the systemic circulation and travel to remote places like the joints, the arteries, the brain, you know, causing diverse symptoms in a patient like this with Churg-Strauss.
Yeah.
So we would look at that as well.
Okay. All right. Best of luck to Anthony.
Right.
All right. We have...
I just want to mention one other area. Uh-huh. It's the MTHFR connection to inflammation. It's very important.
Oh, and
I'm
yeah.
learning more and more about it. It's a very new subject, but there's some people who have genetic defects that make them much more prone to allergies and autoimmune disease, and that has to do with what's called an MTHFR polymorphism, and this is something that we look at. These are people who don't do well with ordinary folic acid and require methylated folate and high doses sometimes of methylated B12, and they are very quirky, and they require real targeted therapy. They don't respond to some of the usual things that we give patients.
Would you test everybody for that the way we test for vitamin D?
You know, I'm beginning to think that because of the high prevalence of that, that especially in look, if you get like a standard, say a patient comes in, they're just kind of like, you know, overweight, out of shape, and eating a bad diet, and their cholesterol's high, and their blood pressure's borderline, and their glucose tolerance test is a little off. You know, you just put them on a clean diet. I'll just send them to you. You'll instruct them the right kind of diet. We'll give them a series of nutrients that help support that. Bingo. They're going to do great. That's a relatively simple kind of lifestyle fix. But some of the really complex patients that we're seeing now, patients with very, very intractable problems who've been to many, you know, there's such a whole fleet of holistic practitioners out there. There's chiropractors. There's NDs. We end up seeing people sometimes who've seen four or five different practitioners or more before
yes.
and tried a million
yes.
different things. And, you know, so we need to really drill down and investigate further. And for some patients, the MTHFR treatment model may offer an opportunity for a breakthrough.
It's fascinating what we're finding out about that.
Yeah. But say, look, we just keep learning more and more.
Right. Okay. Our next question is from Karen. And she's writing from England. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. My husband's whole
family... Isn't that
family,
great? She's a listener from England, yeah.
She says, my husband's whole family, including
his
father...
Can you do a British accent? Can you do a British accent?
including his father has osteoporosis.
Indeed.
They are all on bisphosphonates once a week for several years. The ages are, the father is 84, the mother is 79, and the sister is 48. I'm concerned about that sister.
There is a gene that makes sometimes entire families susceptible to osteoposis.
Wow.
It's like either vitamin D receptor problem, or there's some people who have faulty collagen. They just don't make good collagen, and that's the matrix for the bone, so they have problems.
Interesting. Okay. Karen says, my mother-in-law was on strontium ranelate for a short time and had heart palpitations. Mm. My sister-in-law asked her doctor about it, and he said it's now out of favor in England.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't think the heart palpitations had anything to do with that. How many people have heart palpitations and are taking strontium?
I've not seen it.
Yeah, there's a
not
little...
seen any.
There's a caution on strontium ranelate for a rare condition, Dresser syndrome, which is a form of, it's a rare... complication of strontium ranelate. I haven't seen it with strontium citrate, which is the form that we use in this country. So I wouldn't rule out the use of strontium citrate. The question is, I don't know that they have that available in England. I think we have it available over the counter here. I'm not sure it's available. We also do not have the prescription drug strontium ranelate in this country. So we have a reverse situation of Europe where we have the over-the-counter product, but we don't have the prescription product. There they have the prescription product, but not the over-the-counter product.
Well, Karen's husband, who with osteoporosis, is not taking bisphosphonates. He's taking vitamin K, D, calcium, and strontium calcitrate online. She says calcitrate.
Which is, well, that's what we use strontium citrate, which I don't know if it's calcitrate. I think it's strontium citrate. I don't think there's calcium in it. I hope there's not calcium in it.
No, I don't. I hope not.
Because that would interfere with the strontium.
It should. It would interfere with the calcium. Yeah. Karen asks, are there any other supplements, lifestyle changes you can recommend? Thank you. Love your show. I've passed it on to many friends.
That's excellent. We're developing a following in England. That's great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Dr. Hoffman, I would first want to check for celiac disease in this family, too.
Sure. That's very important. Absolutely.
And especially with the sister who's only 48.
And they're Brits, because in the Celtic population, that is a very prevalent gene mutation.
Yeah. I would look there, too, for one thing.
Okay.
But it seems like he's taking the supplements, the vitamin K, the D, the calcium, the strontium. We would also give DHEA. After checking DHEA levels, we would give Ostera.
Ostera, which is a hops extract combined with some other nutrients. Yeah, that's good.
And which slows down that rapid bone turnover.
By the way, Ostera, just mentioned to our listening audience, it's not available in health food stores. It's available via the internet through practitioners, and we give it to our patients. We make it available to our listening audience, and it's safe and very effective. Not as strong an agent as strontium, but it is effective. The other one that we're looking at is bone morphogenic protein, or BMP. The product is Ostinol, O-S-T-I-O. Let's try it again. O-S-T-I-N-O-L. And the product it's a little expensive. I give it to patients who've had fractures because I think it's going to be very helpful for healing fractures. But it also has some good studies supporting its bone-enhancing effects for osteoporosis. And also it seems to have an anti-osteoarthritis effect. It's just the price point comes in a little high, but it is a useful product. Ostinol, maybe $300 or $450 a day. It is also available via our dispensary at drhoffman.com.
Okay. Best of luck to Karen's family. I do want to mention...
What about the vibrating platform? How about that?
Oh, the vibrating platform, yes.
Yeah.
This is new.
Yeah. Well, there actually are several versions of it. The one I like is from... Let me see if I can remember the name. It'll come to me sometime during the podcast.
Yeah. I wonder, is there a length of time for its use? I think it's very, very exciting.
It's like 10 minutes a day.
10 minutes a day, okay.
Mm-hmm. You stand on the vibration, and it doesn't like, it's not like a jackhammer. It's sort of very gentle vibrations, but what it does is it sends a signal to the bone to remineralize. And this is...
So you couldn't get the same effect if you sat on the washing machine or anything like that's not really going to do the same thing.
You know, that's a great question. They have studied the specific frequency of vibration that is most conducive to. They've spent like enormous amounts of money, $9 million in research at Stony Brook. Under a state grant, actually, there was a it's like a state. Grant to promote this discovery.
And our tax dollars at work.
And unfortunately, it's the units are kind of expensive. I think they run for about $1,000, and hopefully it'll be like flat screen TVs.
That'll come down. Remember when computers were $3,000?
I remember that'll
come down.
I had one of the first laptops. I got it from a patient who worked for IBM. And he says, I can get you a laptop. I said, amazing. Can you get me a laptop? Because it was like super small. Now it looked like it was like, 8 pounds.
Uh-huh.
But it was way back when. It was in the 90s. And he said, I can get you a deal. It retails for like $8,500, but I can get it for you for just $6,000.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, deal. You know, I wanted the latest technology. And, you know, of course, that's...
Now you could get it for $600.
Plus throw in a couple of flats, you know, like, you know, 60-inch flat screen TVs while you're at it, which also used to cost a lot. So hopefully these the vibrating platforms will come in cheaper. I'll see if I can remember the name before the end of the podcast.
Okay. Best of luck to Karen's family. Let's see. We have another one from Lori from California. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I love gathering wisdom from your podcast. Cannot get enough of your show. I was introduced to you only 2 months ago from my nutritionist, so as I sought to shrink my fibroids, and since I've learned more in my journey to health, I've been eating clean and paleo for the last 18 months. I'm 44, and since have reversed my arthritis, my prediabetes, my rosacea, Raynaud's syndrome, PMS, as well as other ailments, and her husband and her three kids are all healing too.
Fabulous.
Yeah. She has two questions.
Sure.
First of all, I'm going to go with the second question first. It may be a shorter answer. She has high beta carotene blood levels, over 1,000.
Okay.
And although she reduced it by avoiding all supplementation containing vitamin A and beta carotene in the last year, it's still elevated at 250. But what the only thing that she is still taking, though, is a whole food-based supplement for several years called Juice Plus, which combined has 250% the RDA of vitamin A in it.
Well, that's going to give you a lot, yeah.
This might be the reason it's still elevated.
Right.
If it's elevated.
Absolutely, because that's full of mixed carotenoids, because you get that from fruits and vegetables. Look, here's the deal. First of all, it's not necessarily bad. Mm. It's called carotenemia, and it can make your skin look yellow. And it's not actually harmful. It may be cosmetically unattractive, but it isn't necessarily harmful. And what can be harmful is the regular retinol form of vitamin A. That can be toxic and get into the liver. But beta-carotene, or at least, let's put it this way, I don't like the synthetic beta-carotene.
Yeah.
I like mixed carotenoids, especially from fresh fruits and vegetables. That's better. But you really can't become sick from beta-carotene supplementation or mixed carotenoid supplementation or too much in the way of fruits and vegetables. What it does indicate, however, is it does indicate a susceptibility to thyroid problems. Patients who have this, you know, we do a physical exam and I look for yellow skin, and some people will say, well, yeah, I'm juicing all the time. I'm a vegetarian. I eat tons and tons of fruits and vegetables. Okay, then they're going to be a little yellow. But if they don't and they have this, then it's sometimes a sign that their thyroid is weak. It's kind of the same enzyme that's responsible for converting beta-carotene or mixed carotenoids into active vitamin A is weak in people with hypothyroidism. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a bit of a telltale sign of hypothyroidism. Yeah,
good to know.
Yeah, but worry about it. Don't you?
Yeah. Second question, and this might be a reason to worry about it.
Okay.
The second part of the question. She asks, is eating liver from chicken or beef toxic to us because it's a filtration organ? I've heard that organ meats have more nutrients than muscle. That's actually true.
Right.
Also, she says, biblically, not to take in blood. Would liver fall in that category?
Well, that's all. That's, you know, whether it's a matter, that's a religious matter, whether to take in blood, you know, the kosher laws and the halal laws and so on.
It is an organ of detoxification.
Yeah,
let's just say that up front.
Yeah.
Now, instead of beef liver, I would often recommend calf's liver, especially to some of our patients who may be iron poor.
Right.
I think chicken livers are okay. I'm not sure that Lori should take liver, given her high levels of beta carotene. It might just become toxic over time.
Yeah, I'm thinking, their liver is a big source of vitamin A, but not beta carotene. So that wouldn't be a problem. I do recommend grass-fed or organic liver or organs. I think organs are great. They really are good for health. They also, what's interesting about organs is that in addition to being rich in iron and rich in protein and relatively low in fat, they also have a protein composition, which is actually a more favorable protein composition. You know, with this concept of what we call nose to tail, you know, it's kind of a culinary concept. It's nose to tail. restaurants and butcheries where they kind of going back to European style eating, where, you know, in Spain people like to eat kidneys, and France they used to like to eat brains until mad cow disease, but they do eat a lot of liver, and people in, you know, throughout Europe eat tripe. And actually the organs, we find them yucky in America. We want filet mignon, and we want muscle meat. But muscle meat has actually a different composition. It may be that muscle meat contributes to higher levels of something called IGF-1, which is thought to be potentially a growth factor for cancer. And so you eliminate that when you mix your muscle meat with what's called offal. It sounds awful, but it's spelled O-F-F-A.
O-F-F-A-L.
That's right. Offal is like the internal organs of animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at all cultures. You look at the Native Americans, and you look at, even our grandparents. You can remember back in your...
I remember having tripe.
Yeah.
And my mother would regularly make brain salad. Now, that I wouldn't touch.
Yeah.
I mean, and she'd make liver from time to time.
Well, your grandparents were from the other side, as were mine, But, that's part of traditional cuisine. And I think that those foods can be very healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
If you can get your head around it.
Okay. Do we have time?
Yeah, we have time for one more.
Great. We have time for one more. Oh, good. Oh, great. This is actually from Bill. I was reading in an article that says 20 minutes of sun exposure will give us 10 to 20,000 IU of vitamin D. I have seen similar statements before, and what is always missing is some context. Mm-hmm. If I'm fully clothed with long sleeve shirts, am I getting the 20,000 IU? What about a short sleeve shirt? What about with shorts? What about without a shirt? It seems to me that the area of exposed skin is likely critical to these figures, yet that attribute is never mentioned.
Well,
Bill is actually right.
There's a lot of variables. I mean, first of all, the color of your skin affects that, because if you have very dark, if you're dark African, very black skin, you're actually going to absorb less.
That's true.
And so you'll make less vitamin D. But
you need to be in the sun six times the amount of a lighter skin individual.
So that's number one. Number two, yes, of course it does depend on the amount of skin surface that's exposed. So there are actually studies of, traditional Orthodox women who are modest for religious purposes, and they do go out in the sun, but they're so covered up that they have a high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency in spite of the fact that they go out in the sun in countries like Israel, where it's very sunny places.
And Saudi Arabia.
Another one.
Yeah.
Yes, that's another, because, totally different religion, but same custom. The women wear veils and very, they don't show so much as an inch of their ankles or, their wrists, and they're all covered up, and there's a lot of vitamin D deficiency.
That's true. The other thing that's critical here, and this is what we're told by most doctors, especially dermatologists, they advise don't be in the sun, at noon. It should be, around 10 a.m. or sometime after 3 p.m., but we're not getting the UVB rays then. We actually need to be more naked at noon than at any other time, or sometime between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m.
And the time
when the UVB rays are present.
And the time of year matters, too.
Yes.
Because if
anywhere north of Atlanta, we don't get any between, November and April.
Right.
So the farther north you live, the less time, it's only basically in the summer months.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that, I think,
that's true.
Pretty
much the other thing, Bill, if you're over 70 or even 65, you don't have enough 7-dehydrocholesterol under your skin anymore as you used to. You've only got 25% of that, as you would have as a young man, to interact with the UVB rays
right.
and to create the vitamin
exactly.
D, the active vitamin D.
As you get older, your skin becomes less able to make the vitamin D, because the cells that are responsible for that conversion become senescent. They're less efficient at making that conversion. And the other thing to point out is, let's say you're already taking a lot of vitamin D by mouth, and you're afraid, oh my God, I'm taking 5,000 international units of vitamin D, and if I go out in the sun, this says I'm going to get 10 or 20,000 additional IUs of vitamin D, I'm going to overdose on vitamin D. There's actually, with the sun, there's what's called feedback inhibition.
Yep.
In other words, if you have adequate levels of vitamin D, you're not going to make that much more through sun exposure.
It's going to shut down,
It's going to shut down. So However, you can overdose by taking too many vitamin D pills. There's no feedback inhibition of that. But in terms of sun exposure, your body seems to equilibrate. It takes as much vitamin D as it needs from the sun, and it actually will downward adjust the production of vitamin D if you have vitamin D sufficiency. So something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good. So good questions. All right. So that's all that we have for this week's edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. What did you write about in the newsletter this week?
The newsletter this week, hold on here. Let me just, how to get a good night's sleep.
Right. Because you had a question from a guy.
We got a great question from somebody about how to get a good night's sleep. So I talk a lot about sleep hygiene, among other things.
And we feature the product Glysom, which is a remarkable product that not so much helps people fall asleep, but helps people stay asleep. There are a lot of things that help people fall asleep, like valerian and hops and melatonin, but people have the opposite problem. They fall asleep, and then they wake up like 3 in the morning, and they're bowled upright, and they can't stay, go back to sleep. The product Glysom, which is made from glycine, amino acid glycine, seems to do the trick for those patients.
It does. Keeps the core temperature down so they stay asleep.
Yep. drhoffman.com is the source of that. And, check out our newsletter. Subscribe to it. Check out our podcasts because we have some good ones this week. And everybody have a nice Memorial Day.
Yes.
Coming
up. And you too, Dr. Hoffman.
Indeed. Thanks for joining us today, Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.